Hello and welcome to this episode of the Fitness Unfiltered podcast. I am joined by my co-hosts, Mike and Dan. Mike, how are you?
Fine.
Dan, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm fine. Thanks.
Good, good. We're also joined by collectively one of our favourite people. I was going to say people in the industry, but I think just people is accurate here. And also, I'm biased because my business partner on EIQ and someone who I have always massively looked up to. And I know they say don't meet your heroes or don't work with your heroes, but genuinely working with Amelia has made me respect her even more, not just because of like her work ethic, her values, her knowledge and her attitude, but probably more so than maybe anyone I know. When she says she's going to do something, she does it. And so although she already has a PhD, she's just gone back to college to start a counseling course, which I just think is phenomenal. So welcome to the podcast, Amelia, and please tell us what you've been up to since we last had you on.
That was really cute. I was getting ready. I was like, right, I'm going to say, I'm fine. And then you said that. I was like, I can't even say I'm fine because that was so nice. So thanks for that. That was nice. Yeah, I am being a hashtag influencer right now in Dubai. Thought I'd just get that one out there right now. And yeah, like you said, I've gone back to college to go back to uni in September to do psychotherapy because I think that is important for me. I'm kind of moving away a little bit, I suppose, from the fitness space, but I basically just want to get better at what I do. I feel very much like I do counselling work already without having the official scope to do it. And so I want the official scope to do it so that I can work within my boundaries and my scope of practice. So that's really all I've been doing, other than EIQ, obviously, and coaching, obviously. And the EIQ launch was 2 weeks ago, which has been fantastic to get our brains working again. Like, I'm so buzzed from it, and I know you're the same. Like, it's so nice just to take in a new cohort of students, and some of our older students who have stayed on are just still as equally as buzzed themselves as when they started. So I love it.
Yeah, it is an awesome group this time. I mean, last time it was a great group as well, but there just seems to be like even more excitement about learning, and it's amazing to see people invest in themselves, especially at the moment. Like, it's extremely hard, especially as a personal trainer. And so we're very grateful that people have. And the topic today has absolutely nothing to do with that. We actually want to talk about today call out culture. Mm. Who wants to start?
Can we just add that the topic has no reason why we have invited Amelia on? It's just coincidence.
Yes, she's the biggest caller outer that I've seen.
Yeah, it's just coincidence that we've picked Amelia because of her emotional intelligence and all the other exceptional views she has on stuff to have on. But yeah, because we've discussed it briefly before, haven't we? We've discussed call out culture and call in culture. And that
don't you
perhaps
think? I think this was possibly our first ever podcast. Was like,
I can't remember
how to, or it was one of our first topic
podcasts. Manifesto. It was basically the manifesto of Fitness Unfiltered when we were establishing our core values when we first started the podcast. We talked about how we wanted to be discussing things positively, and we also wanted to. We said we would call out ideas, but we would not call out people. And I think that that's something that is a really, really complex process and something that is actually quite difficult to adhere to. And we've all had quite a lot of conversations about it recently, and I've had a big chat about it with Amelia as well, because again, like you say, Emma, like I think Amelia's got a decent amount of, like, that sounds really patronizing. She's got like great emotional intelligence.
Got brains in it.
She's got brains in it. And I think emotional intelligence is like a quality that is, it's really difficult to quantify or even to kind of to explain, but I think it's something that's quite important to have. And it does, even if you have it, I think you can let things get away with you. And I think it's sometimes just really useful to kind of center yourself back to your values, because I know that I've had times in my social media life where I've ended up getting very heavily caught up in calling people out, correcting misinformation. And then sometimes when I look back on those experiences afterwards, things that I felt very righteous and very justified in doing, I've looked back on and thought, I'd like it if I had done that a little bit differently. And I'd love to explore maybe why it is that we end up moving maybe outside of our values. And I think it's a lot to do with emotions. I think that, you know, when you feel really passionately and really strongly about something, it's super easy to get angry about it. And I think, Emilia, you were saying something about how, you know, when you do a rant, it's different to when you do a post, for example. And like, tell us a bit more about that. Like when you're wanting to talk about a topic, how do you make sure that you keep it within the boundaries of that sort of situation?
Yeah, I think it's really, really tough. I think one of the things you have to be really mindful of, and you and I spoke about this, Mike, is being very aware of the lens that you're seeing it through. And that's really, really tough to do. But we all see things through our own biases and our own lens and our own traumas, which is something that Mike and I were discussing, because he'd heard on a podcast with Michaela Cole, who is fantastic and extremely emotionally intelligent. And so I think the first thing is identifying that you're seeing it through your lens. And for example, recent events for me were, I felt very, very, had a hugely emotive reaction to something because of my own personal triggers. And so you have to really take a step back from that. And then at the same time, you know, I was having this discussion with Emma where we both said, you know, we both just need to take a step back before we react. And I think this kind of comes into a more kind of spiritual mindset, but one thing that meditation and mindfulness allows you to do is respond rather than react. And I think that's what, when you try and put things out on social media, I think it's really important to try and respond to something rather than react. And I think that's what we've tried to do this week with kind of the explosion of some of more obvious call outs. But I think that's really where your focus has to go. And, you know, if you're debating posting something, just hold off for a little bit, sleep on it. And Emma has this rule, I think it's don't do anything after 8 o'clock, like text your ex or post on social media or whatever it is. And that's a really nice rule. And I've actually used that myself. But having that kind of guideline in place where you go, I'm not sure if I want to post that, I'm going to take it down. And again, this week I've put videos up that I've almost put to my story, and I thought, I'm just going to take them down and then I'll decide tomorrow. And then none of them ever came to fruition. So I think it's the responding rather than reacting is so important.
I think that's a good point. And I think a lot of the time, although we're using the word emotional intelligence, which I think comes into it, it's also just simply perspective. And when you're so sucked into something and everyone you're following is talking about the same thing, and like, we see these like echo chambers within social media, especially within the fitness world, where it seems like everyone is talking about the same thing. Taking a step back, and either like Emilia and I were speaking about this, speaking to someone out with the fitness industry or who is like on the edge of it, who understands what's going on, but isn't sucked into that. Or even like you were just talking about your own traumas or your own triggers, and knowing that your personal experience actually makes you more sensitive to this subject. But then asking like myself, who doesn't have those same triggers, like, do you think this, like, what are your thoughts on this? Because that's always interesting to like, okay, well, actually maybe it is my own biases that are making me feel this way. And I think we see that a lot in general with things like anti-diet messaging or like diet messaging, where someone who's potentially struggled with their diet or their relationship with food or has an eating disorder is like, that is so dangerous, that message. And they're very passionate about the fact that it is, when actually it's just, it's fallen on the wrong ears almost. Like the same message heard by someone who is overweight and would like to lose some weight, or heard by someone who has an eating disorder and needs to put on some weight, is both extremely helpful and very damaging at the same time, depending on who is listening to that. And I think there has to be, because if there's not, we could never say anything. There has to be some emphasis put on the consumer of the information, if you will, for them to be logical and be like, oh, that's a dieting message meant for people who are trying to lose weight, not for me, I'm looking to put on weight. And I know that that's easier said than done, but there needs to be that level of like, almost like self-responsibility in what you're listening to and who you're listening to.
I think the tough thing with that, like, and I totally agree with it 100%. But I think it's a point I've made before, and the way that other people have disagreed with that point, and I still haven't quite decided where I sit on the spectrum, because I think personal responsibility is so important in that field, is that a lot of people say, but yes, when you're dealing with issues of vulnerability, so particularly vulnerable groups, so, you know, for example, people who suffer with eating disorders, part of that disorder might be that they seek out that sort of information. And actually, so some people will say that the weight loss information, for example, will need to be even more sensitive, because actually a lot of the people that are purposely seeking it out because it supports their disorder might be the ones that are vulnerable to it. And it's so hard, because you think, you do, like, as I've said that too, I was like, well, people shouldn't be looking at that if that's not what they're after. And
sorry, Mike, can I just interrupt you there, just to add to your point, because I think part of the problem there as well is that often you have champions of certain movements that then direct those people as well, especially champions with a large audience.
Yep.
Which is almost by calling out this information that isn't helpful for a certain subpopulation, they're actually directing that population to that information to almost make them angry. And it's kind of just like shaking up the hornet's nest. Of course, people are going to be angry. But part of that equation is, you know, at the moment, social media dehumanizes everyone, doesn't it? We haven't got that eye contact with everyone. We're essentially living that life, and that perception of what's going on is 2D. It's just through a screen. Sorry.
Yeah, do you know what I think as well, is that, I don't know if my internet connection just died a little bit.
No, yours is fine. It's Dan's, I think.
Okay. What I think there as well is that I think that we have to kind of take responsibility at least for our echo chamber. And what I mean by that is, you know, I have quite a mixed echo chamber. It's still an echo chamber, but I kind of get people from all sides, as all four of us do, actually. But I think that if you have a very strong echo chamber that clearly has the same opinion as you, you have responsibility in that sense. You know, for example, if you talk a lot about intuitive eating and you then get a sort of really strong grind harder diet person come into your space, I don't really think you've got responsibility to nurture them and to make them see a different side, because realistically, that's probably never going to happen. But within your space, if you are, for example, a quote unquote intuitive eating practitioner and you are very anti-diet, within your space, you have the responsibility to foster a healthy environment towards the anti-diet movement within your group. I think that's because you know, I was working through this question myself, like, do we have a responsibility for the mentality that we create in our followers? And I think on the whole, we do.
Than do we have a responsibility to who follows us, which is like almost impossible to do.
I agree.
Like, you can't just have like, I guess you could. And is this an answer? Like, hello, this, you know, on your Instagram bio, this is primarily, you know, I work as a fat loss coach. If you're struggling with an eating disorder, it's probably best not to follow me. And I think that's extremely hard to do. And also people are just going to follow you anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is something that I do within my coaching practice, of course. Like, if someone has even just a past of disordered eating, I will always say, like, I actually don't think it's going to be useful to you for you to be in a group of people who are encouraging weight loss and who are working towards that as a goal. Like, it's not, even if you're not working towards that goal, I don't think it's a healthy place for you to be mentally.
Yeah,
I agree. It's harder to control that on social media.
Yeah, and actually we don't want to do that either, because actually, you know, some anti-diet people would really benefit from listening to some potentially diet messages in terms of, you know, education around certain foods, and vice versa. We don't want to just preach to our echo chambers. We want to include all of these people. And I completely agree with you 100%. You know, you can't, ultimately, especially if you're a fat loss person, you can't come on my Instagram page, but you can read tabloid newspapers and, you know, expose yourself to every other thing that is pro diet culture, for example. So I completely agree with you.
That's the thing as well, like, I think that if you're not willing to learn from the people that disagree with you, I mean, like I did a post yesterday about fat loss, like whether it should be encouraged or discouraged and all of that kind of stuff, and I realized afterwards that there's so much stuff from that post that I learned because of the anti-diet movement. So although I don't necessarily agree with all of their principles or the extreme parts of their principles, there's definitely a lot that they've taught me about issues around, you know, surrounding diet culture and stuff like that. And actually, like, if you don't allow yourself to be educated by other people, like if you don't accept that, like, kind of this, that almost there's no smoke without fire view, like we were saying before, people's views and opinions are often shaped by their traumas, but a lot of people will have experienced those traumas as well. So, you know, if there wouldn't be that smoke without the fire, so if there wasn't an issue there, it wouldn't be causing this movement. But then how do you then tease out the issue? You do it by listening to those people and listening to what their concerns are, and then reflecting on
what's
reasonable and which ones aren't.
So I was going to say that I agree, but I find with a lot of like the anti-diet movement and sometimes just generally a lot of like anti-anything movements, there's often just this kickback of like, well, you see, that's problematic, don't you? And genuinely, I'm like, no. But yeah. I'm more than happy to like hear why. But I do see like, especially some of the like bigger accounts, and I don't know if it's just this assumption, and I'm sure I've made this assumption like in other situations of like, oh, well, I just assumed that you would know what a calorie is or what a calorie deficit is, for example. But they just assume that you can see that that's obviously problematic. And I'm like, I actually genuinely wish someone would break down different parts of diet culture, what the problems are here and how that might be impacting people. And I actually think that would be extremely useful. And there's like almost a foundation that's missing, because I think a lot of people that promote diet, they don't see what the problem is. And it's not just them like choosing not to see it or because it doesn't fit with their biases. Like, some people are actually open to learning these things.
Yeah.
There isn't really a good explanation of these.
But I think, I think that it's like, it depends who you follow and who you speak to. So there will be again, like with the personal trainers who just grind harder because they don't really know the basis of and the understanding of coaching. There will also be the people who have jumped on the bandwagon of the anti-diet movement who are like, yeah, it's problematic, and they won't be able to explain to you why. But within those spaces, there will still be people who will, and that's why it's important to figure out who you should be listening to. Or not necessarily who you should be listening to, but who you can have a conversation with.
I guess as well, like my point about a lot of these things is that you're not going to take away weight loss messaging from general media, from social media. Like, it will always be there. And I think what we need to work on, again, it comes a bit down to like social responsibility, but like, changing the way you think about things. Like, why is something triggering you? Like, can you change the way you think about that? Or like, what are the traits in you that are predisposing you to like a perfectionist mindset, which we know is closely linked to like disordered eating and unhealthy relationships with food and more like eating disorder type behaviors? And you need to counter, instead of just being like, I need to block myself from these messages because they're unhelpful to me, you need to change the way that you think about things, which is the hard part. And that's why there are people like Camelia, and you're often learn how to help people change the way they think about things effectively through therapy and through, I guess, a lot of things that I don't know about. But surely like that has to be part of the answer as well. But I think what we, like coming back to kind of what we wanted to discuss today, like how useful do you think the act of calling someone out is?
So I think the answer is almost in that question, in the sense of so obviously we've been thinking about this a lot and chatting about it a lot, and I think it comes down to calling someone out is potentially, I would use the word bullying, someone. I think, okay, to kind of start this conversation, I think we should all try and think that people are doing the best from where they're at. And that's a really hard thing to think when people are doing really unhelpful behaviours. But if we try and assume that everyone is doing the best they can from where they are right now, it's a really helpful way, I think, this is how I try and approach it, to not get too emotive about the subject. And so, for example, if you've got an influencer who is peddling a diet product in a very, very, very diet culture way that is really toxic to anyone, and is, I try and think, well, is she a quote unquote victim of diet culture? Potentially, yes, she's a lot of these influencer 20, 30 year old women who have grown up very much conditioned by diet culture. And so is she doing the best that she can, this person, you know, in any situation? I think that she probably is. Do I think that her methods need to be called out? Do I think the products need to be called out? Absolutely. Do I think that a specific person needs to be singled out and have a basic, you know, a mob mentality against a single person and her identity? I think that's really, really unhelpful. And I think I personally feel that's where the difference is. The attacking of a character and a person versus the attacking of a culture, a product. I think they're quite separate things.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually, because I've been thinking about this in different situations, I think it was Mike that said this in the group, like, I think I'm okay with the person being mentioned as long as it's in a like respectable way. Like, okay, this really famous person is selling some crappy product. I'd quite like to draw attention to the fact that this doesn't work and it's unhelpful to people and you're wasting your money and potentially harming yourself. But you then don't have to call her names. Like that, then it's like, okay, so the calling out of her was maybe to benefit people. I think when it gets personal, not only do we like forget that these are actual people and it's a horrible like thing to do to a person, even if that person is doing something wrong. But also, I just don't, like, I don't think it adds anything. And then I think it crosses the line of, I'm just trying to build my own social media following by creating disputes between people.
So I would just, because I've been in that situation before where I have called out, like probably more in the Twitter world. Like a few years ago, I used to often like draw attention to those sorts of stuff. And I often ended up in some quite heated conversations with like people from, I think like Geordie Shore or something. Like I'm talking ages ago, I can't really even remember it. But I remember situations where what would happen invariably would be like, I would either send them a polite message or respond to it and go, look, you know that this doesn't really work, and that, you know, what you're doing is potentially, you know, dangerous for the following reasons. And then they'd reply with something like, shut up, you moron, or whatever. And then you would suddenly go from thinking, right, that person's doing the best with what they've got and they're trying to do their best, to that's a terrible person who was just quite nasty to me, and now I don't like them, and I don't any longer care about, like, it almost feels like fair game now because they've been really horrible to me, so I can be really horrible back. And even saying this, like, I don't think that's the right thing to do or the right way to behave, but maybe early on in my life, before I'd, you know, been experienced in my career and I'd learned more about people and about life and stuff like that, I had probably had a far more rudimentary version of good versus bad and put things in these very sorts of definitive boxes, not realizing that often those people are behaving that way for many reasons. And actually, like, I wrote an article about this, I think a couple of years ago, about the idea that actually a lot of these people themselves are victims of manipulation. And, you know, like, if you're somebody, I think, who has been, let's say you've lucked out, you've got a job in something like in reality TV where you end up being quite well paid, you're not necessarily utilizing a skill or a qualification, and that part of your career has come to an end, and now you need to maintain your lifestyle and your money and pay for stuff for your family and all of those sorts of things. So you're going to basically be open to accepting opportunities. You might not be the most intelligent person in the world, and some big like person in a suit comes across and goes, we've got this product, it's amazing, look at all these scientific studies that back it, it fully works, it's really safe, it's good for people, we would like to pay you money to promote it, nobody loses. I can't imagine that that person is necessarily going to be so discerning to think, gosh, I think this might cause harm to other people. They're gonna, you know, they will be easily manipulated, just as the audience will. And I guess what my question is, you know, that's almost the problem with personal responsibility, is at what point, where does the blame actually lie? Why is nobody going after the companies? Why is nobody going after Boots and Tesco's and Sainsbury's for selling booty? Like, these are big companies. You go and support them by doing your shopping there every week. But they are promoting the same things that this person is promoting, that you're attacking them for promoting. So where, you know, it doesn't always fit in, I think, with that ethos.
That's such a good point. That's such a good point, because I think it comes down to engagement. And I'm going to put that out there right now. You don't get engagement by criticizing Boots for selling one product when they sell, you know, other places may well sell these things too, but you know, they'll sell 100 million things that don't work. So there's no point in going after them. Whereas if you go after one person, you get engagement because this person has a million followers on Instagram. You've got a mob mentality. You've got a specific echo chamber that are keen to get involved and impress you in some way. And so therefore they can go after this person too. I think it's a lot easier to get angry at a person because we know, especially reality TV stars, we may know those people. We feel like they're one of us. So they're fair game. We can relate to them, and we say, well, we would never sell that. So they're just a moron for selling it. And I think that idea that we know them, and it's almost like they're fair game because they've exposed themselves to it. They've chosen to be a reality star, or they've chosen to sell a nutrition product when they're not a nutritionist. But I also think it's really important to think, well, is this person actually learning from this situation? Really good example of this actually is Food Science Babe on Instagram. She called someone out on TikTok. I saw one of her posts the other day, and she called someone out on TikTok, and she said, and I think in a quite a nice way, and said, this is untrue, this is incorrect, here's the truth. And then this TikTok influencer, young girl, put a new video out and said, I apologize, I was wrong, this is actually the truth, and I was highlighted this to me by someone else.
And see, that's amazing. And I'm just gonna and I think that's what can happen when you're like, hey, like, I know you're trying to do your best, but actually this information is here. Like, that's exactly how social media should work. But it comes from both sides. It's not just the young girl being completely open to the fact that she's wrong and wants to change her mind, like, massive respect to her. Mm-hmm. But also the way it was approached. So it wasn't, you're an idiot. It was like, his, you know, I can complete, even when you relate to it, like, most of us have done stupid things. Like, oh, hey, you're demonizing sugar. Yeah, I used to do that as well. But then I was exposed to this, and actually we don't need to be demonizing sugar. And here's the right information. Not look at this fucking idiot demonizing sugar. Doesn't she know anything? Blah, blah, blah. Of course she's not then going to be like, oh yeah, I completely changed my mind. In fact, we know that she's then going to go even more in on it, looking for evidence to support her side of the story. Like, I would probably do the same in that situation, because I'd be like, oh, you're calling me an idiot. I want to prove that I'm not, by trying to find even more information on this. Mm. Like, that would be your response. It's like, whereas if you're approached in a very nice way and it's reassuring and you're like, everyone makes these mistakes when they start, but like, here's the right information. Even doing it in a way that like doesn't put you in the spotlight, like DMing them some information. I know that that doesn't always work, and it's slightly different when there's like a product being sold, because they're obviously not going to make money from changing their mind there. But when it's just like misinformation, I think that's so useful. Like, oh, here's some studies. You could use these to make a Facebook post and rectify what you've said. And like, you don't have to say it's from me.
Mm. Mm. Exactly. If, you know, if someone comes at you and calls your name, you immediately are defensive, and your reactions as a defense when you're on the defensive are never going to be proactive and helpful. They're always going to be aggravated, angry, you know, and aggressive. And we've seen that a lot in recent weeks, where an initial kind of attack is aggressive, and then it gets defensive, and then it becomes aggressive from the other side. And then it's just a completely unhelpful situation. The only people that benefit from this are the people that are getting engagement from this process.
It's funny that that example was a woman.
Yeah, Emma and I have spoken a lot about this week. And actually, boys, I would be really intrigued to hear your opinion about this. So in a nutshell, we feel, as the two women in this foursome group, well, it's interesting that a lot of the biggest names in the industry are men, and a lot of the biggest names in the industry are men who have built a following based on calling people out. On the flip side, the biggest names, female names in the industry, have often got their names by getting their bodies out, which is, I mean, I get my body out, there's no judgment on this, but it's really, really interesting to see that sort of side by side. But also, I wonder what the reaction would be if a woman, say for example myself and Emma put a video, equally put our own videos out, name calling a man, every name under the sun for doing something stupid. It would be very interesting to see the reaction that we would get as two women aggressively attacking a man. I don't think we'd get the same engagement or the same encouragement because women are quote unquote supposed to be nice and polite. And
well, I think it would be like you see a man doing it and it's like, yeah, he's really passionate about getting the evidence-based message across and protecting his followers and blah, blah, blah. Whereas if we did it, it would be like, they're really angry and aggressive. I wonder if they're on their period.
Angry feminists. No, it's a really difficult one because I guess like I can only base it on my own thoughts, my own echo chamber. It's difficult to picture.
We've also picked two of the least angry and aggressive men.
What was I going to say? I can't, go on, Mike. You fill in the gaps while I collate my thoughts.
I can see why that would be a conclusion. And I suppose what I'm doing right now in my head is racking my brains to think about. And I think one of the only episodes was that I have had of calling somebody out that has gone well was actually when I called out, a guy from Geordie Shore. And it was really interesting because he had done a whole U-turn on promoting this product and he'd completely stopped doing it and had said, actually, I hold my hands up on this. I've been told that this is nonsense. I'm sorry. And I remember thinking, oh gosh. And I don't know, I think that it depends what field it's happening in. So like, I think that there are lots of, I think that one of the biggest issues I think is always going to be that most diet products are marketed towards women. So in our field of stuff that we are doing, or that we're talking about, we will often see women being the people promoting things. And the PT industry is often quite male dominated. So we will see the men calling it out. Actually, funnily enough, like in my field, in medicine, it's often been, I've seen it a lot the other way around. I've seen female doctors calling out misinformation in medicine. And would I say it gets the same reaction? No, I think actually you're right. I think that that females do tend to be more likely to be called angry. And I mean, I'm basing this on a few, you know, like a very small number of people, so it's not like I'm, you know, I've done a study on it or anything, but I guess, yeah, I would see that would be not an unreasonable thing to say. And I guess it goes back to the whole like paternalistic and sort of things about people thinking that, you know, men are taking care of people and you know, women are meant to be nice and polite, like you say. So if she's swearing and getting angry, people might go, oh, I don't feel comfortable with that. But then again, like, you know, I don't feel comfortable with being sweary and name-cally on social media either. And I don't find it comfortable when that happens. But I do, you know, like I find the issue of engagement a really, really interesting one, because I think that what we're assuming, and I'm not suggesting that what you're saying is wrong or that the assumption is wrong in any way, but I think that when we assume that something is because of engagement, there's no right to reply to that. And actually, if somebody, whether it's through genuine intent or whether they've convinced themselves of a noble intent, if somebody believes that they want to help people and they want to correct misinformation and they want to use social media as a vehicle to do that, they do need to be mindful of engagement. They do need to get as much engagement as possible. Otherwise, they won't get that message across. So there's also a justification for that, you know, for that kind of behavior. And actually, I've had lots of very direct conversations with people, again, more so in medicine than people in fitness, about like, and I've said, look, do you think it's professional that you did that? Because I think there's very different boundaries in medicine, first of all, and we've got this big regulatory body, which is quite frightening. And actually, you know, it's really important that we maintain professionalism for all of the right reasons, but also because we can get in big trouble if we don't. And so I'm a bit like, I don't know that was professional. Could you not have private messaged that person? Why did you need to call them out? Why, you don't know what they're about. You don't know why they've behaved that way. And then people have said to me you are the problem, because you are saying that doctors are unimpeachable because they're doctors, so therefore they shouldn't be held to the same standards as everybody else. And I'm like, I don't think that at all. I just don't necessarily believe that you are qualified to police it, that you should be the person who decides that they are held to that standard, rather than, you know, letting their regulatory body decide. And I think that's the thing, is that when righteousness is involved and when we feel that we are justified in our opinion, we then can, I think, sometimes do slightly more unsavory things in order to get us to our destination than we might actually think is reasonable. And we convince ourselves in the process of doing that it's okay, because it's what everyone else is doing and other people are doing.
And you're encouraged to do it by everyone liking the post and it going viral and all this
there
stuff.
There definitely is a level of self-deception there, I think.
And you get sent, I often get sent posts to discredit. And they'll send them to me and go, can you talk about this? And you almost feel this pressure, like if you don't, then you're it's a cop out, and you're not taking your role seriously as somebody who has vowed to try and improve that misinformation. So I think there's also a lot of pressure on people to call out this stuff as well.
I don't think that's what we're disputing. I think it is important. It's the way in which it's being called out, and I actually think you've got a good point there that engagement is important. And knowing a lot of the people who are quite rude and extreme on their social media, knowing them and meeting them personally, that isn't who they are. And that's...
But then when I say, when I said earlier about coming at it from a place of everyone doing the best they can from where they are, that wasn't exclusive to people peddling diet products. That's inclusive of everyone. So that's inclusive of people who I potentially may feel have exhibited in the past bullying behaviour. I think they're doing the best from where they are, and I choose to believe that they have good intentions, that their intentions are to help people. I choose to believe that, and so I give them the credit of the hope, I suppose, that they are doing it for the right reasons. And something that Mike and I discussed earlier this week is it's very hard to decipher if someone's doing it for engagement or if they're doing it for the right reasons, and we can choose to believe that they're doing it for the right reasons, still feel that they're doing something maybe quote unquote wrong. But one way that I think is helpful, and whether it's for us to decipher if it's for engagement or not, it's probably not for us to do it. Who cares? I care when it's kind of preying on vulnerable women. That's when I care, and that's quite emotive for me. But I think one thing is quite obvious is when people create a quote-unquote shitstorm and then step out and watch the shitstorm continue. And that's, I think, where you can almost... tell. Well, that's where I choose to sort of get some insight into, right, someone has done this with good intentions, but then they've fostered this really toxic shitstorm that is spreading really fast towards this vulnerable, potentially with child woman, and they've then just sat back and let it happen. And I think that's very different from someone calling out a diet product because they think it's helpful for their followers. And I think there's quite a distinction there. But that might be a personal thing, that's my opinion. I don't know.
I think there's a fair amount of ego climbing and that elevation through association when it comes to those things as well. So when that bandwagon does appear, it's not necessarily whether that person feels that strongly about it, but it is an opportunity. Oh, this is doing quite well. I can hop on board with this. Because it's, I don't know, we've discussed it as a group before, but almost have a little bit of a pushback. So everyone's talking about one thing. That's the one thing I don't want to talk about. Because everyone's hopping on it for the wrong reasons, I feel. I want to go back to your bit on the differences between men and women, just briefly. Because I do think men get an unjust and unfair amount of credit, actually, in terms of authority. And the assumption is the majority of men, especially if they're quite prominent in the fitness industry, they're, in air quotations, evidence-based. Even if what they're saying doesn't make any sense, and when they're calling out certain things, they can't necessarily justify the reasons why they're calling it out or why said product doesn't work. They are simply just calling it out because it's a diet product. And I think that's reasonable for people to question your motives in that instance. But whether it's a societal thing, depending on how deep we're going to go today, I think when it comes to aggression and typically male traits, it's like a... not on a given, not on a that's okay, but more that's accepted. That's what men are expected to do. They're expected to give it angry and ranty. Whereas when women are like that, and I'm not saying rightfully or wrongfully, it's seen as uncharacteristic and, oh, that's not expected. That's not how women behave. Similar to your point. So I think there are a lot of men in the industry that have authority probably for the wrong reasons, and probably lots of women that know better don't have the voices they deserve. But I think that's, and with the influencer argument, I see this with certain causes as well, with that you have influencers that then become activists, and you perhaps have a subgroup within that cause they're fighting for that don't have the voice they have. That, I feel, is the influencer's opportunity to then, I have this platform, here's the mic, you're far more informed than I am. Let me share that person's work. Let me give that person a platform. But then, in a sense of building more followers and building an audience, I think some influence sometimes take the mic for themselves, give me all the spotlight, even though I'm not the best person to talk about this subject.
Yeah, yeah, steal their content, reword it slightly, if yeah. anything.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're, it's like, you know, Black Lives Matter, okay, I do fall into some ethnicity somewhere there, but I've never feared for my safety based on the colour of my skin. So I'll have an opinion on that. But if someone, you know, that is black has a larger voice, but doesn't necessarily have the platform for that, I'd much rather go, well, that's you. There's the microphone. Like, let me just help share that message.
I think that that's a problem that we see, and it's all about, you know, staying in lanes and stuff like that as well. I mean, we see, and again, like COVID, gosh, I mean, the amount of sort of medical students and junior doctors who've not seen very many patients who have, you know, who are basically talking about epidemiological and virological things that they don't necessarily understand because they're given the trust and the space to do that. And it's really, 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 really difficult to manage. Because you kind of, it just goes all back to Dunning-Kruger, doesn't it? Like, we all think that we're an expert on everything because we're living in it. But actually, it's very, very difficult to step back. And I think it's something that we've, again, like as a podcast, it's something that, you know, we are really, like, we rarely just go, oh, let's just talk about this, us three. We're often like, who's the best person who we can get on this podcast to talk about it, rather than...
I agree with this, but then I disagree to an extent as well. Like, there are people that are far better or like far more educated than me in certain areas that I speak about quite frequently. But what I'm like to think, at least I'm quite good at, is making that information understandable to people.
Oh, sure.
So, like, I often actually think, and I'm just basically making this point because I just don't think an expert is always the right person to translate information. And we see this all the time in science, like the best expert in certain areas is actually not a very good communicator. And it's probably those same traits that make them very good at what they do. Maybe that's like lab-based molecular work, but they're not very good at translating that information into practical advice for people or even like understandable science for people. Yeah. Which is why someone like, we've had Hannah Ritchie on the podcast a couple of times, and I've had her on my own podcast talking about the virus and the vaccine and, you know, just general information around that. And she's not a virologist, but she's extremely good at translating science.
Exactly.
But applied information.
I don't mean necessarily that you need to be that expert. What I mean is you need to have an understanding of whether or not you're the best. So, like, to put it almost in the reverse, I know that, for example, a lot of people are asking me about, you know, what's going on in the NHS and all of that kind of stuff. And I will frequently say, I think this is going on, but actually we do have to remember I'm working in general practice. I'm not in a hospital. I'm not on an intensive care unit. So the views of what I see are very different to what everybody else sees. And also, the people that I am speaking to are telling me this, you know, like I can certainly translate stuff and I can say what's happening, but for me to be the one that's kind of, you know, writing articles about how difficult it is for me, etc., I think it's just, I don't know, there's a little bit of like, I think that people want to be the one in the spotlight a bit more than they often actually warrant having.
Yeah, I think we are talking about two different things, like for sure.
But I think we do need those people though, and I think that in general these people, even if they're not experts at things, that shout very loudly and, you know, are potentially a little bit one-sided. I think we do need that. And in general, it's a really net positive for the industry in general, and it opens up discussions. And like I say, if you think about the overall messaging, it can be really helpful. I just think the issue, I suppose, is when it crosses the line, either into incorrect information or it becomes more personal. And I think that's
yeah.
So I've been thinking about like why I was like, I just felt a bit about the whole industry for the last week. And I know I was speaking to like all of you about this, and I've been quite like, why did that sort of trigger me? And I think for me, it's honestly that seems to be the face of our industry now, is angry, aggressive male PTs. And actually, I just want people who I know, coming from, like, if I was a client, that wouldn't make me want to change. Like, that would make me want to hide away and like eat my feelings potentially. Like, I want people to know that there is a very compassionate side of the industry who are happy to help you, who would never call you names, who really care about your results. And I understand the social media strategy of, you know, exactly what we've just been speaking about for the last 40 minutes. But I just, like, it hurts me a little bit, or maybe that's what was like upsetting me about it, that I feel like that's the face of the industry now.
I agree.
It's more just that I want people to be aware that that isn't what all personal trainers are like. And I know that it's like painting everyone with the same brush, but I think that's what a lot of people do a lot of the time is, you know, Mike, you must see this when like really crap GPs or really crap doctors are like put on the internet for something and everyone's like, oh, that must be all GPs are like that, which absolutely is not the case. And it's the same with personal trainers. It's like, we're not all like that.
Yeah.
And I think
I was just going to say, like, I think it goes back to the, again, consumer, not consumer responsibility necessarily, but an understanding that there is, that like most of these fields, general practice, fitness, there are professionals that would be the perfect professional for you in every industry. And there are professionals that would be the very worst professional for you to be involved in. And I think it's really interesting that, because the other side of the argument is that as well, there will be a lot of people who, you know, for everybody that is turned off by a certain type of personality, there will be there will be somebody that is really drawn to that sort of personality as well. And I guess the point is, as long as you maintain that there is this spectrum of different characters and different ideas and different concepts in an industry, like, and that's why diversity, which I know is such a massive keyword, but I mean diversity in the truest sense of the word, diversity of personality, diversity of character, is so important. Because actually in jobs where you are reliant on making connections with people and relating to people and feeling valued by people, those traits are really important, but they're different for everybody. Like, you know,
and I agree with that, like 100%. And actually, I think I personally gain from a lot of these like more aggressive approaches, because I'm not like that and not everyone is drawn to that. My issue isn't that there's loads of different people and we all take different approaches. I think that's fantastic, and that's why so many businesses can thrive. But it's that it seems to be the face.
Yeah,
I agree. And I think I was the same. Like, it was a sadness type feeling. Like, it was sad because that, it's like our home, right? That's, we love the fitness industry and we're proud to be in the fitness industry, and we've worked really hard to move away from a shame-based model of fitness industry that we know doesn't work, because shame codes the very part of us that's capable of change, as we all know. So we've heard this before. So I think it was sadness. It was like, we've really worked hard to get to this point as an industry, and it's still, this is still where we're at with it. And I think it's, I also think as well, like, I also love that we've moved away from fat loss being the only indicator of health, right? So I like to think fitness is a lot more focused on holistic health. Obviously, I'm well aware, I'm in an echo chamber, but we have been moving towards this. And I know that from discussions with PTs at my gym and things. And then when there's kind of a shift away from the more holistic message of health, because mental health appears to have been completely pushed to the side when we've gone through one of the hardest years for mental health in the world, for these types of situations to arise where it could genuinely be damaging to someone's mental health, as a fitness industry and as a health industry, that also triggered me to feel quite sad, because I just think, I thought we did better than that now. And yeah, so I think it was a sadness driven kind of.
I was going to echo some of what you said, but also coming out of that void of what seemed like aesthetics only for so long to being a bit more progressive and actually the humanistic approach or the compassionate approach to actually coaching people and helping people. For me, it kind of boiled down to, because you can, should you? Like, you can build an audience by just sharing rig pics, you know, ass cheeks, abs, etc. But does that mean you should? Like, you can build an audience for calling people out and being polarized and nasty, but does that mean you should? And ultimately, we're not in control of what anyone else posts, but it is that self-responsibility thing. And the thing about self-responsibility is that it's nothing we can force upon anyone else. We can only be in control of what we put out. And I think if the intent of that is mindful and you do have thought into your audience. And I've mentioned this before on a podcast, a theorist, a socialist called Hall, and his theory around encoding and decoding, and that you have your intent, which is encoded intent behind the message that you put out. But how that audience then decodes that message, it's then that the communication occurs on the terms of the listener. You know, it's based on that person's biases, what they're going through at that moment in time, and their interpretation of what you've written, you know, what they've read.
Which is like such a good point to make. And I think even the same person at different times of day or in a different mood would feel differently about the exact same messaging that they see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that's been an excellent discussion.
What I caught of it was fantastic. I do apologize.
Sorry, Dan was like quite quiet, but we also lost him for quite a large proportion of the podcast. So sorry.
I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Can we make you like
a
permanent feature?
Can I get a t-shirt?
I think actually you have to go through the rite of passage, which is we just send you the audio file now, you do the show notes and
absolutely not. Want a t-shirt that much. I'll put it on my Instagram. Is that not how it works?
Well, we're lucky to get that sometimes, I tell you.
If
you're listening and the shoe fits.
Probably
not listening, to be fair.
Yeah. That has been a fantastic podcast. And actually, yeah, Amelia's probably our most frequently guest. So thank you very much for coming on. And if anyone has enjoyed this podcast and would like to share it, we would massively appreciate that. If you want to rate, subscribe, whatever. Mostly we like it when you tag us on Instagram, because then we're like, oh, someone listened. Yay.
Engagement.
Or
engagement in it. Maybe tag us and then say something quite aggressive. Yeah. Or like call us out for something, and then
Amelia and Emma.
I don't think I can handle that.
Yeah, this was the other thing. One of the other reasons I would never call someone out is because I don't have thick enough skin.
I know, exactly.
Yeah, same.
And also, I think that you then when you see people getting called out, you're almost like, you go, oh God, if that was me, I'd feel so awful right now. I think what this discussion just demonstrates is just really, really useful food for thought. I think it's really, really good to just step back from situations a little bit and just think about it rather than getting caught in a wave of stuff, like Amelia said earlier, no judgment whatsoever to anybody who does, because I certainly have done that my share of times and much more. And actually, I've often felt, you know, when I look back on some things that I've sort of said and done on social media, I thought, that's not really who I am, or that's not really who I want to be. But that's how we learn. That's how we kind of learn and grow. And it's not about kind of saying...
We all make mistakes.
Yeah. And also,
it's not just about making mistakes. It's about developing and changing our minds. And actually, you might listen to this podcast and go, I completely disagree. And actually, I think this is the way to do things and this is not the way to do things, whatever. Yeah. Cool. Like, that's why it takes different strokes with different folks.
Yeah. And also, what's quite possible, which won't build you any audience, if you do have a gripe and a personal problem with said diet products, you can just report the page to Instagram. No one will know, and you don't get any credit for it. And now they still get their posts taken down. It has exactly the same effect.
Except they never take them down.
Yeah, except that never ever works.
I sent you photographic proof that they did the other day.
Oh, really? Oh, no, no, Dan, that just hid it for you because you...
No, that hid it for a certain audience because so many other people complained about the said post. So that stopped under 16 seeing that post.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Well done, Dan.
No, it takes it all away. Don't praise me, God damn it.
I said he didn't want credit, but he...
I don't want credit.
He's like, look what I did.
Anywho.
They're all the same.
Right, without further ado.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.